Here we are with a very special episode of Norm Nathan's Vault of Silliness. It hails from December 10th, 1993, and is appropriately titled, It's Shearing You're Hearing. We begin with Carol Stein Kraus, the PR manager from Parker Brothers, talking about the company and its games. There's lots of cool info about Trivial Pursuit and Monopoly, plus company history, challenges, and more. Next is an absolutely fantastic interview with George Shearing. He was appearing at Scullers in the Guest Quarters Suite Hotel. The talk is so varied, everything from classical influences and relations to jazz, sissy accents, great stories, and lots of silliness from George. And it all gets even better when Ellie Shearing, George's wife, joins the fun. They also take calls. Bob in Boston, with a call that stirs up Norm's ire. Janet from Arlington loves George's pairings with Mel Torme, and her husband, Les, is Norm's piano teacher. Scott in Provincetown, who does a jazz show, Lush Life, from 6 to 9 Saturday nights on WOMR 91.9 FM. It's a volunteer community radio station in Provincetown. We hear from Hank, Pete in Lawrence, and Bob in New Hampshire, with quite the description regarding his feelings about missing the chance to talk to George. Other extras for your dining and dancing pleasure. Norm reading the weather. Top and bottom hour news sounders. Daryl Gould intros Jack Hart for traffic. And Norm is seriously thinking about the need to redo shows. We can't leave out the commercials. Norm does a read for the National Credit Group. It's okay to tell Norm about your bad credit because he is a doctor. Oh, and if you'd like to remove all your clothes, Frank and Shirley for the new Westboro Antique and Flea Market. Marazine with the former, highly disoriented Linda Kern. The Club, now available in designer colors. ADT Home Security, the red and chafed Jim Brown of Grand Prairie, Texas for Gold Bond. Classic Ovaltine with Paul Rossi drinking it live from Valley Stream, New York. And a brief sprinkle of Baby Gold Bond. Oh, make sure you listen closely to the end of the interview with George as he gets the last laugh. Episode 116, It's Shearing You're Hearing, tickles its way to your auditory canals. Now.
What kinds of stuff for ideas and Christmas gifts and that kind of stuff. And of course, Parker Brothers has been in business since the earth was a molten lava. I cannot imagine the world before Parker Brothers.
Well, maybe not quite that long, but we've been in business since 1883.
That's not bad, considering most businesses fold after the first year. Do you still have a plant up in Salem?
Yes, we continue to do some operation from our Salem plant, but most of it is done out in Springfield.
Yeah, you have such a cute, adorable voice. You sound like one of the little kids buying one of the games. Are you really the PR manager, or are you his daughter?
I'm an imposter. No, I am the PR manager for Parker Brothers.
Okay. And, of course, Trivial Pursuit is your game. I would think just putting that out would be enough to make everybody retire for life.
Oh, we wish it was that way, but there's so much business out there and so much competition out there. But Trivial Pursuit continues to be one of our best-selling games.
And you putting out new cards and stuff, updating the Trivial Pursuit game?
Yes, every year we come out with a new edition, whether it's a master edition, which is the full game, or a card set. And this year we did something very unique, and we came out with an all-American edition of Trivial Pursuit. And what we did was we solicited questions from the American public and said, hey, you know, you guys have been so faithful to us for 10 years. You guys have so much trivia, your trivia buffs. Give us your favorite trivia question. And we composed the game of those questions.
Oh, that's nice. And, of course, Monopoly is kind of a synonym for Parker Brothers. When did Monopoly first come out? We played Monopoly when I was a kid, and I'm already 250 years old now, so that had to be one of the first games, was it?
I was going to say, are you giving away your age now? 1935.
Well, 1935.
So in 1995, we'll be celebrating the 60th anniversary.
Oh, I was kind of hoping you'd say it came out in 1890 or something like that.
No, 1935. And again, I mean, Monopoly is, like you said, you think of Monopoly, you think of Parker Brothers, you think of Parks and Rec, you think of Monopoly. I don't know if there's a household out there that doesn't have a Monopoly game. And what we've done to make that popularity continue is come out with a junior version of Monopoly and a video version of Monopoly to make sure that everyone has something to play with and to bridge the generation gap a bit.
And you said, as you pointed out, Monopoly will be 60 years old in 95. Is there some big kind of celebration where you will actually go to Atlantic City and buy Boardwalk or do something dramatic like that?
Yeah.
I don't know why I asked you. That's the most stupid question I've
ever. No, it's not really, because we are working on the plans for the 60th anniversary. I've actually had two meetings in the last 2 weeks regarding that. We have our national Monopoly championship will be held in 1995. And we have a world championship being held in 1996. So there are definitely some special events planned.
And there are, right through the years, there have been championships, haven't there, Monopoly?
Yes. We probably do about 250 local Monopoly tournaments a year. And those are tournaments by organizations who raise money for charity. And based on that, we get, a champion from every state. And that champion goes on to the national, and the national winner goes on to the world championship. And in 1992, that was held in Berlin, Germany.
When the whole electronics thing came along with electronic games and that kind of stuff, did that affect Parker Brothers very much? I would think it must have affected most everybody.
It did in some ways, and actually I was just reading an industry piece and saying that even though that the electronic industry and the technology is continuing to move forward, it doesn't directly affect the board game or toy industry. Again, because there's so many people who aren't into that high technology, even though we think it's all around us, some people still want the traditional board games. But as I mentioned, we have adapted some of our games to video, Sega and Super Nintendo, and we continue to look to the CD-ROM and CDI.
I guess you have to look at that. I guess I don't know whether it's because I'm from an older generation, but the sitting around a table with a board game seems to me a whole lot more fun and kind of comfortable than worrying about your computers and playing games that way.
I must say, I tend to agree with you. It is more interactive, and studies have found, and it's not necessarily as so for 1993, but I know in 1992 that during economic times where there's a recession or where it's the economy is not as strong, board games tend to be more popular. And also, the Clintons are big board game players.
Are they?
Yes. Bill Clinton, actually, his favorite game is Trivial Pursuit. So I think that probably has had some effect on the country also.
Wouldn't that be an interesting thing to put him on and his family on national television playing a Trivial Pursuit against, I don't know, somehow... To see him fall down, for example, and miss like the capital of Utah, I mean, maybe that would demoralize the entire country. Maybe we better forget my idea.
Well, he has admitted. I think Diane Sawyer did a piece on Primetime Live, and he was still in Nashville. And she said, "What are you going to do your last night Little Rock?" And he said, "I don't know. Walk around the neighborhood, see my friends, play Trivial Pursuit."
Really?
Yeah, so it's definitely up there as far as priorities. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
No, I think that's a nice thing. What about something brand new? What is the newest thing that is totally away from, say, Trivial Pursuit or Monopoly?
We have a game called Snardbark.
Snardbark.
Snardbark. And uh-huh. Snardbark is for ages 5 and up. And it is a creature. It's a yellow creature with pink dots. And he has a 3-foot-long tongue. So the object of the game is you pull out the Snardbark's tongue, and you have little snards, these little creatures. And the object of the game is to get your Snardbark off his tongue before he snaps you into his mouth. It's a battery-operated machine. and as you move, his tongue moves into his mouth. It's quite interesting. It ranks number 4 in the Duracell toy test.
Oh, really? Now, how do you get ideas for toys? Are they mostly freelance people who suggest things to your company, or do you have a staff of wild thinkers sitting around in some airless room dreaming up these gimmicks?
It, It is a combination of both. We do have a whole group of people in our company. We have preliminary, we have product development, we have acquisition department, we have folks down the model shop. Everyone is working toward a common goal, and that's to develop some games. So we do most of our resourcing internally, but we also have some inventors that we've been working with over the last 110 years that help us develop our products.
Now, do you distribute your games worldwide? And if so, are they, is there a Spanish language or Italian language or Russian language version of, say, Trivial Pursuit or some of the others?
Trivial Pursuit is actually distributed in, I believe it's in 19 languages in 33 countries.
Mm.
So we do distribute our games worldwide. We have licensees who distribute our games for us. Monopoly is in, I believe, 53 languages. So it really, most of our classic games, Monopoly, Trivial Pursuit, are done in foreign languages and foreign countries.
Okay. We have talked through the past couple of years with the individual inventors who come up with board games and stuff, and I guess electronic versions of some of their board games. 20 questions. We have a man out in the Midwest at Wichita, Kansas, who has come up with Geographics and various history kind of board games. Are there more of these things? You were talking about competition that Parker Brothers would have. Are more and more people getting into this line that you're aware of?
Well, there are a lot of ideas out there. We get inundated with requests to look at product and look at games or listen to game ideas every week. It's probably one of the many phone calls that we get. We just get inundated. So there are a lot of ideas out there. It's very hard to get into a big company.
Because the people I'm talking about have started their own companies and have put their own boards, games, and stuff on the market themselves. Mm-hmm. And I wondered whether this was sort of a new trend. I don't remember that happening, but then again, maybe it did, and I just missed it.
It did happen. To give you an example, Trivial Pursuit, they had a very hard time launching Trivial Pursuit, the inventors in Canada. It failed miserably at the first toy fair that it was shown at.
Hmm.
And it was through just trial and error and then just word of mouth that it became popular. Monopoly, Parker Brothers rejected Monopoly when it originally was proposed to them because it had 52 fundamental playing errors. And we said, no one's going to want to play this game. And then we heard people talking about it locally from where the inventor was from. And we said, oh, let's look at this again. And thank goodness we did.
I guess most of the games, what the basic rule would be, you ought to be able to learn the rules without having to take a week off from work or school to find out how. I remember Ernie Kovacs. Are you aware of him, Ernie Kovacs? He's a very, very inventive comedian.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And one of his early shows, he talked about a game, and he went through these complicated rules, where in the end you threw a poison dart at your neighbor and you jumped up and said wahoo and went on and on and on and on. And part of the funny part of the whole thing was just these long, complicated rules. Obviously, that's the kind of thing you have to stay away from, and I suppose keep them as simple as possible. I do remember games as a kid where somebody had to almost go to school to take a course in it before you could figure out how to play the thing.
I agree. That is one of the main challenges of the industry and of Parker Brothers, is to make sure that you are going to get a consumer and they're going to be able to read the directions, understand the gameplay, and be able to play the game without too much effort. Everyone is so short on time these days, or we think they're short on time, and time is of the essence. So you want to make sure you have a game that is easy to understand and easy to play and enjoyable at the same time.
And because if time is of the essence, you wonder, does that cut into people who are willing to sit around a table and play a board game? I hope people do that, because that's the way people get, it's lovely to think of family sitting there getting to know each other better by playing games and all of that kind of stuff. Have we got to that kind of a fast-moving society where this is becoming more and more difficult and where the games have to be simpler and played sooner? Because Monopoly still can take quite a long time.
Right. That's part of Brothers' reason for being, is to make sure people are sitting around at home playing board games. And that's why we've adopted so many different products into our line, is to make sure we have something for everyone out there.
Do you test it in any specific market when you have a new idea and a new game, or do you just put it out for general use?
We do a lot of field testing. Sometimes it's folks at Parker Brothers who have kids or friends, and we bring those games home to play. We do play games at work, and we also do some field testing. We do testing with kids or in daycare groups. So there is an extensive amount of testing for gameplay, but also of quality, of safety, of rules going on.
I would think that would be so lovely to be an inventor of a game. I don't. Maybe it's not as glamorous or as fun as it seems. It's kind of like being a kid forever. It's like being a cartoonist or something. It's dealing in the world of games, which would seem to be a great deal of fun. Your job sounds like a lot of fun, is it? Or you?
It is. I really enjoy my job an awful lot, and Parker Brothers is a great company to work for, so I am having fun.
Okay, I don't know why I asked you that. I didn't expect you to come on and say, I hate my job at Parker Brothers. It's like a slave shop. But anyway, I know you. No, I'm just joking when I said I'm not really joking. I guess I really mean that. But it does sound like a fun kind of thing.
No, it is. There is, because of the industry, and because we are working on games, and we're working on games for preschoolers, we're working on games for kids, and we're working on games for adults. There's lots of energy there. And lots of fun ideas going around.
Okay, and the fact that it is Parker Brothers, which has a great international name, there's no problem with distributing your game, so they would be on sale at just about every place where games are sold.
You got it.
Okay, that's really nice, which is a whole lot easier than, again, some of these other people I'm talking about who are just starting up their own games, which makes it kind of tough. But if you see the name Parker Brothers, I think that's pretty much a good selling point, too. Now, how old is Trivial Pursuit now?
It was 10 years in 1992, so 10 years last year. It's on its 11th year.
Yeah, there's another game that seems like it's been around forever, but it's a relatively new game then.
Yes, it is. And actually, it really brought the adult game category to its peak. I mean, there wasn't really an adult game category. It was either kids or family board games. And Trivial Pursuit broke open that market for everyone else to follow.
It's one, I got to tell you, it's one of my favorite games, too. I really love it, and Monopoly is still fun.
Right.
I wish you good luck on that, and also some of all the newer things. I know you're putting tons of newer games on the market all the time also. And I appreciate you talking with us about it, Carol Steinkraus. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
Have a happy Christmas.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Frank, didn't I tell you you'd have a great time at the new Westboro Antique and Flea Market last Sunday?
Frankly, Shirley, I have to admit that you were right this time. In fact, that was incredible. I've never seen so many antiques and collectibles under one roof.
Well, Frank, I have a surprise for you. The grand opening of the new Westboro Antique and Flea Market was such a success last Sunday that they're doing it again this Sunday.
This Sunday.
And every Sunday.
Every Sunday.
It's New England's best antique and flea market, with 150 dealers selling countless antiques, collectibles, and new merchandise, too. And Frank, did you say something, Frank?
I didn't say anything, Shirley.
They're going to have another country western band.
What? Another band?
And lots of food.
I like food.
Surely you'll work up an appetite while we polish off the last of our holiday shopping.
Shirley, don't call me Shirley. Shirley, you must be speaking.
Frank,
I'm tired of all
the grand opening of the new Westboro Antique and Flea Market is this Sunday, 8 to 4, at the corner of Routes 9 and 135. Call 508-836-3880. That's 508-836-3880. If you suffer from motion sickness, listen to Linda Kern of Lahaina, Hawaii.
I get everything that moves sick. Car, air, boat, you name it. I get disoriented, like a lack of balance. I get nauseated, plus I get a sick head.
It's time you discovered doctor-recommended Marazine. Marazine tablets take the sickness out of travel, help prevent that queasy, nauseous feeling, help treat the dizziness and sickness motion can cause.
And it does the trick for me. I just do not get seasick or air sick. Or car sick. Couldn't do it without Marazine. It's part of my life when we travel. I can travel now in all the different methods without getting sick.
Marazine contains a medically proven ingredient no other leading motion sickness tablet has. And Marazine won't cause the marked drowsiness Dramamine may cause.
If you want to travel and feel normal, use Marazine. know, it's really enabled us to do the kind of traveling we've always wanted to do.
Marazine, M-A-R-E-Z-I-N-E. Marazine tablets take the sickness out of travel. Use only as directed. Available at all Brooks drugstores.
Okay, you're tuned to a WBZ, and I really appreciate it. I mentioned George Shearing will be here live and in person very, very soon. He's playing in a club just around the corner from here, as a matter of fact. And I caught him last night and at the Scullers at the Guest Quarter Suite Hotel, and he just plays magnificently, and it's, anyway, it'll be fun to talk with him. A soaking rain overnight, along with a gusty wind, lows 44. Periods of rain and breezy during the day on Saturday, highs 48. Mostly a cloudy Saturday night with a leftover shower or two and low temperatures about 38. Then the weather gets colder. Sunday will be blustery, colder. Snow flurries are possible, but the temperature's holding steady near about 38, pretty much like they'll be overnight on Saturday night, right into Sunday. About 30. It won't get any warmer than that. And then Monday, mostly cloudy, windy, and cold with high temperatures about 40 degrees. But it's always kind of scary when meteorologists start talking, even snow flurries. Just the word snow in any form makes you realize that it's getting into winter. I say some of the most stupid things in the world. Sometimes I wish I could recall all the programs and redo them, you know, like an author rewriting. Anyway, do you need... I'm going to ask you a personal question. I hope you won't feel offended, but I really feel that we have established a kind of relationship through the years where I can ask you this without you just being totally upset. Do you need Visa, MasterCard, a home or car loan, even a simple checking account, but you can't get them because of unfair credit reporting practices?
Yeah?
You can tell me I'm a doctor, and if you want to take off your clothes while you're answering... I'm not talking about my credit. I know it sucks, but I'm talking about others' credits. And now you made me lose my place here. I was with a patient here, for heaven's sakes. Now I lost my stethoscope and everything. Anyway, call National Credit Group in Boston at 617-536-0639. Home office or telephone appointments available for your convenience. Correct bad credit so you can apply for credit with confidence. Hi. First, you'll go on like this without any confidence. I have credit, please. Oh, please. But afterwards, you'll have confidence. You'll say, hey, give me credit for crying out loud. That's the kind of stuff you'd get. Call 617.
That was
acting. I can hear the sales department saying... there'll be 17 make goods on this one. 617-536-0639. 617-536-0639. No, but seriously, coming up to the news, and then we'll be back with some more stuff, okay? I don't know what kind of stuff, but what do you care? WBZ Boston, 1230. There he is coughing right into the microphone, which is... This is the kind of program it is, George. We're just off the cuff and just kind of casual. I'm so glad to see you again. Good. I was at Scholars last night, of course, where you've got one more night to appear. And in the Scholars, which is part of the Guest Quarters Suite Hotel, which is going to be the most awkward, longest title for a hotel, I think, in the entire world. But you sounded so nice. You and is Neil Swainson.
Neil Swainson. Yeah.
Yeah, the bass player.
Out of Toronto, yeah.
Is that,
I get one Toronto bass player after another for some reason, no?
I was going to say, as a listener, nothing is lacking, despite the fact you don't have, I'd say, a drum to round out a trio. It doesn't bother you as a pianist, then?
Not at all.
He almost seems like your left hand, in a way, the way he plays.
Yes, well, he does provide a lot of that.
I thought I'd say something terribly profound like that, always afraid that the... Maybe what I'm saying makes no sense at all. Anyway, but the first time we talked was like back in the... Do you have the flu coming on?
I hope not.
Because I know Sue Eau Claire, who does publicity for the room, is kind of has come down with some. I thought maybe you came down with the same thing.
Oh, no, I hope not. Yeah. What were you saying now?
The first time we talked, I think, was back... In the 60s, I was doing an all-night show on another Boston station.
Yeah.
And
And when we're playing the record, I'll tell you what that station was, too.
It's WHDH. I'll say it on the air. I mean, nobody listens. Yeah, nobody listens to them anymore, so we can give the call letters. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But you had not been here from England too long at that point. Have I got my dates wrong?
Well, I came in 47.
Oh, okay. So
and
you had
I think
been around.
Maybe you and I must have met before the 60s. Might be in the 50s. Somewhere.
Yes. I think very definitely that's true.
Yeah. I think you're trying to hide my age.
No, because we both have been around for a very long time. You're one of the great survivors, because in a business where musicians have a tough time earning a living full time, and many have to take up other occupations, you've been doing it for a lot of years.
I was just saying in the car coming over, I've been in the music business for 57 years.
Mm. And you've won just about every award there is for musicians to win. You've done both jazz and you've done classical music.
Yeah.
And you're respected and just admired by just about everybody. What else? Are there some goals you have or some feelings you have, things you have? Not, I can't imagine there's anything you haven't done, but is there something?
There is something I haven't really done, and that is, I find in some of the chamber music a great amount of pulse and beat, and it seems to me that either that music or something written very much along those lines, and speaking specifically of Mozart or maybe some of the Bach, would go very well with a rhythm section. Now, I don't mean drums per se. I mean little hand drums and little hand, you know, cymbals and bass and piano and either small woodwind or woodwind and strings mixed, playing the actual stuff or something written along those lines, abiding by most of the rules which were recognized in those days in the Baroque and after the Baroque.
There was always talk that Bach, for example, when he was writing the Cotta and Fugues and all those things, would leave little spaces, sections of the music for the musician, the organist usually, to improvise. Is that so? And would that be related to jazz or to the kind of stuff you're talking about?
Well, in that, it is improvisation. It would be related. Not, it wouldn't sound like it, but it is a product of instantaneous creativity, which jazz is. I think that the thing that made improvisation in classical music disappear rather rapidly, never to return, or seldom to return, with the numerous editions that came out, there are various ways of playing it according to the philosophy or theory of the particular editor that you happen to be reading. And so since there was so much extant stuff written with variants, improvisation kind of died out in the classical field.
Now, you have performed with a number of symphony orchestras. You've done that, for a number of years. Being sightless, now, how do you manage to learn all these things since you cannot read them?
Well,
do you read them? You read them in Braille?
I read them in Braille.
Okay.
Or I have somebody put them on a tape for me and play them slowly. I mean, my wife can do some of that. Ellie can do some of that. And I did an album of all Claude Bowling music on Capitol, or on EMI rather, Angel, I mean, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And it was Angel Romero, Ray Brown, Shelley Mann, and me. And we did a whole suite for guitar and jazz piano by Claude Bowling. Ellie saw very little of me while I was learning that, because it was, a good 40 minutes of music. And it was all original stuff. I mean, there was no tunes or anything to relate to. You can't say, well, once you know the special melody that was written, it's the chords of Basin Street Blues or something. They were all, it was all original stuff.
Now, was that, did you learn that from Braille, or did you learn that because it was recorded?
No, I learned that for tape.
Yeah.
And Ellie read some of it to me, and I had a couple of readers in to read it and play it for me. And I think I knew it well enough to kind of direct the session once we got into the studio.
Okay, once you can do that, then all the pop stuff that you do, like the great stuff that you did yesterday when I caught you with Good Morning Heartache, and you did The Folks Who Live on the Hill, that must seem like a snap to learn that kind of stuff.
It is. As a matter of fact, I've been a little scared of my memory. It's still very good, but once in a while, I will have a memory lapse when I'm playing Mozart, so I don't do that anymore. Ellie detected it one night. I came off the stage, and she said, "Did you have a memory lapse?" I said, "Only 30 bars." I said, "How did you know?" She said, "I saw your head leaning to port." I said, "You know why, don't you?" She said, "Yes, because you were listening to what the orchestra was playing, so you could improvise in the style of Mozart around what they were playing." I said, "That's exactly right." And I had to do that until I could come back to home base.
What kind of feeling do you have when that happens? Do you
very sit there? Queasy.
I just wonder if you're sitting there in a state of total terror, wondering, am I ever going to get back? And it's not like you're playing with Neil again, you know, where you can,
that's right,
you can fool around a little bit, get caught up, and who's to know? That sounds great.
There's a wonderful story about Heifetz and Rachmaninoff giving a concert in Carnegie Hall. And Heifetz supposedly, I'm sure it's apocryphal, but it can happen. I mean, anybody can have a memory lapse. Heifetz wandered over to the piano, said to Rachmaninoff, in the middle of the performance, he said, "Where are we?" You know, in the piece, right? "Where are we?" Rachmaninoff said, "In Carnegie Hall."
Sounds like that old joke, you know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Yeah. You know? Oh, well, do you remember Ronnie Graham?
Ronnie?
This comedian.
Oh, Ronnie Graham. Yeah, he was in a lot of Leonard Sillman's New Faces.
Yeah, that's sure, right. 1952, sure. I believe.
Yes.
Well, anyway, he did an impression of Harry the Hipster. And he said, "This is an impression of Harry the Hipster. Gibson?" You know, and he put a question mark on Gibson. So then he said, "So this guy's he said, oh, cement mixer, party, but..." He said, "Stop that dancing up there." He said, I told them to stop that dancing, and they did. He said, then this guy was walking down the street, he says, and this cat came up to him and said, "Hey, man, how do you get to Carnegie Hall?" He said, "Practice, man, practice." And he said, "Well, walking along the street," he said, "and another guy came along, and I said to him, how do you get to Carnegie Hall?" He said, "Meow." He was a real cat, man.
It's kind of funny. You've never really talked that so-called hipster language. Once when I was doing a jazz show over at that other station, we'd mentioned once, and I think that's enough for the night.
Yeah.
I found that the people who talked hipper, not the musicians, because I know it normally comes natural to you guys, But the fans, the hipper they talked, the less they knew about jazz.
Oh,
and it was
isn't that the truth? Oh, my goodness, isn't that the truth?
You know, it's like they wanted to be part of this in-group.
Well, we think, you know, the gentleman doth protest too much, you know. He's coming on like a big... And, you know, I could mention people and I won't because, you know, they might hear me, although they're long since gone. But it's really true. But I suppose the reason I don't, can you imagine, you know, with an English accent, I say, man, I think that's an absolute guess. I really do.
It doesn't sound all that odd, you doing that.
I think art really blows the most, you know. I mean, can't you?
Actually, people who talk with the British, this is an awful kind of generalization to make, but the British accent always makes guys seem, forgive me, a little sissy, actually.
Kind of sissy.
It's kind of a sissy accent, is it not?
I'm not
accusing you of that.
First of all, it depends upon what persuasion you happen to be looking for.
No. I'm not talking about sexual persuasion or anything of the type. Just the accent itself is so, to our mind, it's kind of dignified and so cultured.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That it doesn't seem really manly. Unless you use Cockney accent, like, who am I thinking of? Michael Caine, for example,
right.
When he gets a little Cockney.
You
have lost your accent a little bit, but not really totally, considering all the years you've been here.
Well, do you know what? Ellie and I spend 5 months every summer in England. We rent the same cottage every year in the Cotswolds, and it's about, maybe 110 miles northwest of London. Cows come right up to the door.
Oh, yeah.
And they went out there one day. I said, you guys are making some kind of racket out here. What do you think of Duke Ellington? You know, Norm?
Yeah.
They all moved in to go.
You know, that is the worst joke I ever heard. I've been to the Cotswolds, by the way. It is a said he trying to digress from that bad joke. Up at the Cotswolds, we stayed, I remember, at a bed and breakfast place there once, and they... In fact, a couple of them. And the women who owned them all looked like Greer Garson. I thought it was kind of like a scene out of a Greer Garson, Walter Pidgeon movie, but it's magnificent. Magnificent country. Did you ever think about going back and making your home permanently back in England?
Talked about it quite a bit. And I don't know. I think I've been over here too long to do that.
Yeah, you've been here longer than
you know,
ever were in England.
I've been here longer than I've been in England.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, what happens now? You're at the... At Scullers,
yeah.
For people who don't know where that is, again, that's the guest quarters suite hotel, which is on Sturrow Drive, which is where we are. You're right around the corner. It's a continuation of Sturrow Drive, which I think confuses people. They're coming down Sturrow Drive, and then you hit behind BU. If you're coming from Boston, it becomes...
What's the name of the drive? Sturrow?
Sturrow Drive, yeah, as in sorrow with a T, R or something. Anyway, and as you get beyond by BU... It turns into Soldiers Field Road, and we're just around the bend, and you're right there. Anyway, you're there till Saturday night. You do two shows.
And that's it for the year, no?
I guess the year is pretty much gone. And then what happens? You have a chance to take off Christmas time, or is that a bit...
off Christmas, New Year's. I'm doing four concerts in Florida with Scotch Henderson, the Florida Symphony, in January. I go to the Blue Note in New York in February. And then early in April, Joe Williams and I go on a tour of the West Coast, about 2.5 week tour.
Boy, that's fascinating. Now, I didn't know that Scotch Henderson was still in the music business.
Oh, yeah.
He conducts the Florida Symphony? Is that what you said?
I guess he's guest conductor there, because what he really conducts is New York Pops.
Really?
Uh-huh.
He's the regular conductor of that?
Yeah, I think so.
And then I missed something between that and Joe Williams. You said something...
We're going to the Blue Note
in New York,
February.
See, there's another club I didn't realize was still... I haven't gotten to New York in so long, I forgot what exists... But as long as there's the Blue Note, and as long as there's Skitch Henderson, and as long as there's you and Joe Williams, it's kind of nice to have this stable note in a world of ever change. It's so comforting to have you around. I really appreciate that.
I think you'd like this. I had a call from Ruby Braff about 3 or 4 days ago.
Did he yell at you a lot?
No. As a matter of fact, he was very mild. And he said, I've been listening to your records, and I won't quote it verbatim, because if I do, the microphone will be on the floor and I'll be out of the studio. But it said, in effect, said, I've been listening to that Robert Farnon album you made for Teller. And that thing that you did live at the Blue Note, I hear Rhapsody from Teller. And he said, you're really playing so darn well. He said, you don't really need to talk to anybody unless they offer you a lot of money.
That's funny. I got to tell you a Ruby Rap story. Let's just take a little break for I won't call them a word because they're commercials is what they basically are. And then we'll talk some more with George Shearing here on WBZ.
Have you ever heard of a car being stolen with the club in use? You probably never will. No doubt you've heard of the club, America's favorite anti-theft device. The bright red club fits easily across the steering wheel and once in place makes the car undrivable. The club, the one police recommend as represented by fellow members of the Fraternal Order of Police, is effective, affordable, and guaranteed. See package for details. Chances are 1 in 114 that you or someone you know will have your car stolen this year. In 1991, vehicles were stolen at a rate of 3 per minute. So this year, don't let the holidays be an opportunity for car theft, especially yours. Still priced at under $60, the club, now available in designer colors as well, makes a great gift for every member of the family. They'll thank you over and over again. The club is available at better stores everywhere, but please be careful, accept no imitations. Make sure that the anti-theft device you buy says the club on the handle. And happy holidays from the makers of the club. Can you really afford the cost of a home security system? You'll need at least two exterior door protectors, an interior motion sensor, an interior sounder to help scare away the burglar, and a keypad to control everything. That could cost $395. But not when you call ADT. It's all just $195 installed, plus a monthly monitoring fee as low as $19.95. Call 1-800-982-3100 now and save $50 on annual monitoring. A one-time telephone connection required. ADT electronically monitors your home 24 hours a day. If anyone attempts to break in, emergency operators can notify the police. Call now for a free security review. There's no obligation. ADT has been guarding homes and businesses for over 100 years. Get this $300 value for just $195 and save $50 on annual monitoring. The offer ends soon. Call 1-800-982-3100 now. That's 1-800-982-3100.
Jim Brown of Grand Prairie, Texas, is telling us about his itchy chafing problem.
There was an itching and irritation and perspired quite heavily and caused an uncomfortable chafing.
But Jim Brown got relief using Triple Action Gold Bond Medicated Powder.
Actually, relief came the first time I used it, and it does have a cooling feel, kind of like you stepped into a breeze.
Gold Bond's triple action is like three great powders in one. It has the absorbing action of powder, the medicating action of a proven itch fighter, and the drying action of zinc oxide. That's triple action Gold Bond.
You're more comfortable, you feel better, and have a better outlook, really, on everything. Gold Bond medicated powder. It's just a real good product. I've enjoyed using it.
Try Triple Action Gold Bond Medicated Powder. Use only as directed. Available at Osco Drug.
George Shearing is our guest here on the WBZ. Now, you were talking about Ruby Braff.
Yeah.
And when I was doing that all-night show, we were talking about George Shearing. Ruby Braff, who I don't know whether he's simmered down. I haven't talked with him for a lot of years, but he was a tough cookie. Great trumpet player. I loved the way he played, and I liked him personally. But one night he got on the air and he started talking about George Ween. Of course, the entrepreneur who does the Newport Jazz Festival.
Right.
And at the time owned a couple of jazz clubs here in Boston, Storyville and the Mahogany Hall, and where you played quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And he was saying nasty things about George Ween. George pulled his car up around front of the studios where we were at the time. And was challenging him, I think, to a fist fight on the street when Ruby came on. Now, neither one of these guys is taller than 3 feet. They're all little guys. Neither one in shape. George, especially, is a little chubby kind of guy. I don't know whatever happened because I was still doing the program at the time, but that was reported to me later. And I thought that must have been one of the funniest scenes going.
Oh, gosh.
The way you were describing Ruby, though, it sounds like he hasn't changed a whole lot through the years.
Well, I think he's kind of mellowed a little bit because either that
or he was trying to inveigle me into his camp. I don't know which.
Do you find, it seems to me every time I talk to a jazz musician, I say this because I'm hoping the answer will be yes. Do you find more young people paying attention to jazz now? Because the golden period of young people liking jazz, college kids, was the 50s and the 60s. And then during the hippie era, it kind of died off. Are there more young people coming to see you now, do you think, than, say, 10, 15 years ago?
I would think there are more now, yes. But, you know, the 50s and 60s didn't return because it's not returned to the colleges either, has it?
No, it hasn't. I go because I, like, the other last night, this when I went to see you, I took my my youngest daughter, who's 26, and has just developed, thank goodness, a great interest in jazz, because she's the one who said, hey, she said, George Shearing is coming to Scholars, take me there. And I was really so pleased about that. Yeah, every time she comes to our house, she tapes a lot of the jazz things that I have, puts them on cassette so she can hear them in her car.
Oh,
she never would have done that a year or two ago. I don't know whether, maybe she's an exception. Well, she is an exception. But I don't know whether that's true of a lot of other kids. Could we just take a break? We have news coming up, George. And then after that, I'd like to talk more. And if anybody would like to talk to George Shearing, 254-1030, our area code is 617. We'd love to hear from you.
Paul Grossi of Valley Stream, New York. When's the last time you tried Ovaltine?
I just had a cup 20 minutes ago. I just had some lunch and I had a glass of Ovaltine. I have it in my hand right now, and I've been drinking it for years.
Classic Ovaltine not only tastes good, it contains 10 essential vitamins and minerals, nutrients you won't find in Nestle's Quick or Hershey's.
Try something that's refreshing and healthy for you at the same time. I would select Ovaltine. In fact, you know, you could have it hot or cold. You could have it with hot milk, or you could have it with cold milk. So it makes for a different kind of drink.
Just two glasses of classic Ovaltine and milk provide almost 100% of the recommended daily allowance of B-complex vitamins A, C, and D, plus other important nutrients the body needs for strong bones, strong teeth, good eyesight, and more.
I hope more people get exposed to it somehow. Ovaltine is a great drink. That's the real reason I buy it. Great taste, and it has nutritional value. Aside from all that, it's also a fun drink.
Classic Ovaltine. Tastes great, and it's great for you. Available in the nutrition section of Walgreens.
While you're driving your car, we're driving 50,000 watts of power. News all day, every day. News Radio, 1030 WBZ Boston.
It's because we felt we were being hip doing this. We'd say, it's Shearing you're hearing, that we'd sit back content that we were really about as sharp as you could be during those days. Remember I said, if anybody wants to talk to George Shearing, give us a call. And I mentioned the number just once. Every line is lit up. You obviously, as your wife Ellie says, you either have fans or probably a whole lot of bill collectors who've just been waiting to find out how they could reach you. Want to talk to some of the people, George?
Surely, why not?
Okay. We'll try one and we'll see why not. Anyway, Bob in Boston. Hello, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Shearing.
Yes, Bob.
I'm a fan, not a bill collector.
Huh?
I'm a fan, not a bill collector.
Thank goodness.
Listen, Black Satin.
Yeah?
Are you familiar? Do you remember?
Yes. Well,
can you remember that far
remember,
back?
Remember the girl on the cover?
Oh, she was
I
good.
Chose her myself. You know, I read Braille. Yeah.
I want to let you know that there are a lot of people out there that really admire your achievement in music, your superior achievement. It's a shame that I got caught up in all this hokey-pokey that's going on in the world.
We survived it, though, didn't we?
Well, I mean, look, I don't want to sound like I'm discriminating, but, I mean, you had a style and a technique.
He still does. You're talking about him like he's gone.
No, but listen, back in them days, all right, I mean, we were more relaxed, more into good music. It was a more classy scene. We would dress up. We'd go out. An evening was an enjoyable evening. You know, we didn't have to wear bulletproof armor and...
Oh, well, don't overdo it. You sound like the Boston Police pamphlet
well,
with Pierce City.
I don't mean to sound like that, but I'm just saying that there are no places where you can go and sit down and listen
not
to it.
That's not...
you know, you've been out of it so long, Bob, but you're not speaking the truth. That's not so.
Where can I go yesterday, or whatever day
Thursday night was, because now it's now into Saturday, so I get confused.
All right.
But I took my daughter, and I went to Scullers to catch George Shearing. Now, no, we didn't get mugged in the lobby. We went down and got our car, and nobody held me up. You're really exaggerating. Let me go along, Bob, because you're living back in the 50s or 60s. A lot of time has gone by. Guys like you would starve to death if people had that attitude, like not knowing where you're playing and not daring to go out, that kind of stuff. That's kind of silly. There, I made my speech, and now we can get on with it. I feel so much better. Janet in Arlington. Hi, Janet. You're on WBZ.
Hi, Mr. Shearing. I am a fan of yours. I love the music, and I have
That's
all of
nice.
Your records.
Thank you.
Let me say one thing, because I know who you are. And I was just telling George off the microphone, off the air, that I decided to take piano lessons again, and it was your husband that we were talking about.
Is this competition here, Mr. Shearing?
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm rotten, and if you talk to Les about it, Janet, you know he's patient. I'll be quiet now, anyway, so you can talk to George.
My favorites are with Mel Torme. There's just an absolute magic there, and I'm wondering. I've been waiting for another record to come out, and are you going to have another record with him?
Well, that's kind of as much Mel's decision as anybody else's. I'm ready.
I hope he does.
Yeah, I hope so too.
And do you have any new releases?
Yes, we have. We have two. One came out last year. It was called I Hear Rhapsody, and it was live from the Blue Note in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And our latest one came out in May of this year. It's called How Beautiful Is Night. And the orchestra is arranged and conducted by a man who I wish we were more well-known in the United States. He's very well-known in Canada and certainly in England. He lives in the Guernsey area. His name is Robert Farnan. The wonderful, we call him the governor, because he's really the best there is in terms of arranging in my side of the business.
Oh, this is wonderful. Thank you so much for the music you give to us.
Thank you for your interest.
Bye.
Hey, bye-bye, Jan. As a matter of fact, I was talking about with Les, her husband, my piano teacher, about you the other day, Thursday morning. Well, we talk about you quite often. And my mother would say, boy, your ears must have been burning. Anyway, here's Scott, who's in Provincetown.
Right, right. Well, it's a real honor, Norm, to be able to talk to you and talk to Mr. Shearing. When you said that your daughter at 26 was enjoying the music, I want to let you know I'm 36, and certainly Mr. Shearing's music's reaching people my age. One of my earliest memories of jazz was, I guess, a late 50s, early 60s Capitol album that had Like Young on it. And I hope you do more vocals. I know that on your album with Carmen McRae, where you sing Two for the Road, it's just heartbreaking.
Oh, aren't you nice? Thank you.
I'm part of a volunteer radio station here in Provincetown. I have a jazz show Saturday nights.
Oh, what's the station? I think I did a thing on that station.
You did WOMR.
WOMR. Was that public radio?
Community radio, right.
Community radio.
We're two notches below college stations. But we're all volunteers on the air. But your recordings are very popular on my program. And the things with the King Singers and with Carmen McRae and, of course, with Mel Torme. And the Grand Piano album.
Oh, yeah. You know my stuff, don't you?
Where You Weave, It Never Entered My Mind, with the settee.
That's right.
Just beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Just beautiful.
You know what? I really am pleased that you like my singing, because the story goes that there's this man singing when Irish eyes are smiling, a house full of people. And there's a guy in the third row crying his eyes out. And so this Irish lady sitting next to him, oh, she said, that's a lovely song, isn't it? When Irish eyes are smiling. She said, it really warms your heart. She said, you must be Irish. He said, no, madam, I'm a tenor.
You'll never stop, George. Will you, for God's sakes, will you stop? I don't mind you saying this on the bandstand at Scholars, but you're using my program with your bad jokes. Now, just stop it. He's lucky he's lovable.
You don't, right, think, you don't think it's an improvement, huh?
No, you play piano so great and you tell such rotten jokes. I can't believe it.
But he sings great.
He sings, yeah. The fact that I was mentioning yesterday, he sang Good Morning Heartache and The Folks Who Live on the Hill, two lovely songs. And I kind of wished he'd sung more and played more, because you played, I think, only a little over an hour, and I kept saying, he owes us about three more hours before. What right has he got to leave the bandstand? Because we were enjoying you so much. Hey, Scott, thank you. What time is your show on?
Saturday, 6 to 9 in the evening, and it's called Lush Life.
And the station again is what?
WOMR 91.9 FM.
Can you give us a call? How do you do your station breaks down there?
I say, bringing you tunes from the dunes. This is Outermost Community Radio, WOMR 91.9 FM. Provincetown.
Okay, so you got a good plug.
I appreciate it.
The folks who are listening to us in Pennsylvania and West Virginia will try to tune you in.
Well, we only have 1,000 watts, but...
You cover the Cape pretty well? Or...
Well, pretty much to Orleans and sort of the north side of the Cape, and maybe to Plymouth.
Well, you cover the good side of the Cape anyway, Don.
That's right.
You're talking Orleans and that southern tip, or whatever you call that,
right,
part of it.
We're sort of, you know, we're hand-to-mouth. We do about a $70,000 annual budget, but we're all volunteers on the air, but it's a lot of fun.
Okay. Hey, good to talk with this guy. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Norm.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah, I think they all work for free just for the fun of doing shows down there. Let's take just a break for these words, and then we'll come back and take some more phone calls. 254-1030 is our phone number. 254-1030, area code is 617. And George Shearing is with us, and I'm delighted he is, and I know you'll want to talk to him, and we'll get to that in just a bit.
Thank you.
George, I just wanted to mention that I have pleasant memories of you when you came to Perkins School back during the late 60s, early 70s, when I was a student there. And it was really great to hear you were live doing one of your concerts in our auditorium.
Oh, right, right. Did you study music there?
Music was definitely one of the highlights of my my career at Perkins. Yes, not really a career actually, but my studies there. I enjoy studying harmony and.
What's your last name, Hank? What's your last name?
My last name?
Yeah.
Well, my last name is Asian. I don't know if I'm supposed to give that name on the air, but I don't know if that would sound familiar to you. But the question that I wanted to ask you. Obviously, one of my favorite songs, as is many people's favorite song, is Lullaby of Birdland. And in addition to your fine arrangement of it, I remember two others, one by the McGuire sisters.
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
Pardon?
I never heard that one.
What's on their Best Of album?
Really?
If you ever want to take a look through that,
right.
I collect records, and I... collect, you know, nostalgia records from the 40s and 50s and stuff like that. And that's on there, Best of the McGuire Sisters album, if you ever want to check it out. And another one I'm wondering if you could tell me about, because it's a little bit better known. It was done by a French ensemble, and they sang it completely in French. Are you familiar with that?
Was it the Blue Stars or the Something Star?
Had to be that, yeah.
I really don't know. It was done by a chorus. Maybe Norm's familiar.
Yeah, no, I am familiar. What George says is right. It is the Blue Stars of France, and they did sing it in French. A great group, a really good group.
And it was a big record for them. I'm right in saying that one of them is related to either Michel Legrand or...
That sounds familiar. You know, I haven't...
Yes.
I used to play their stuff a lot, and I just... I can't remember the names of the individuals.
It's a wonderful arrangement. I've heard it from time to time on some of these...
I can hear them singing it in my ear right now. They're very hip. Reminded me, there were a few vocal groups that were particularly good during that period. Blue Stars was one. The High Lows was another one. People who do very unorthodox kind of singing. But I thought their version of your song was... particularly good.
Hank, do you remember Ed Jenkins from Perkins?
Ed Jenkins, sure. Yes. He was a very good friend of mine and one of my favorite music teachers.
Is Stella is still with us, is she? His wife, do you know?
I beg your pardon?
Is his wife still?
His wife is, I have not seen his wife for a long time. I know that Ed passed away.
Yes, I know Ed's gone.
I believe it was during the early, mid-70s.
And do you remember another teacher there, Phyllis Paulson? Do you know that name? Phyllis Paulson. She is a sighted girl who learned enough Braille music to learn a concerto.
What was her name again?
Phyllis Paulson. P-A-U-L-S-O-N.
No, that name doesn't ring a bell, unfortunately.
Yeah. She was... She wanted to test her knowledge of Braille music. So she learned a concerto in Braille to do that.
Now, I tuned a little bit late, so I probably should know this, but I don't. Are you appearing in the Boston area right now?
I'm at Scholars, and we close tomorrow night. Two shows, 8:30 and 10:30. And Scholars is in the guest quarters suite hotel,
which, as we mentioned, is the most cumbersome name for a hotel. And you can catch, it's a lovely room, and George plays, I don't need to tell you, plays well.
And where is that in downtown Boston?
No, it's not. It's on the outskirts. It's on Soldiers Field Road. Across the river from Cambridge, right on the Charles River. It's beautiful.
What's the name of it again?
You're going to have to pay more attention there. We've repeated everything three times for you. Scullers Guest Quarter Suite Hotel.
Okay.
He's probably a friend of yours and making us repeat it just so we get a bigger plug in. It's probably
giving you
his
some
game.
Extra publicity, guys.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Okay. Okay. Anyway, thanks for the call,
thanks.
Hank.
Thank you, Hank.
Nice to hear from you. Oh, here's Pete and Lawrence. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Norm.
Hello.
Hello, George.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
I'm another Perkins graduate.
Are you?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
also, I studied music there, too. Not under Ed Jenkins. I didn't have his classes, but... Well, I took piano, which I left because I favored the accordion more. No insult to you, I hope.
Well, actually, I used to play the accordion.
Did you?
But you notice you don't play it anymore. No. That ought to be a lesson to Pete.
Well, actually, now the reason I don't play the accordion anymore is because I found out that the true gentleman is a man who knows how to play the accordion and doesn't.
Oh.
Pete, did you know a man named Henry Santos in
Yes, I took under him.
I was wondering, when you didn't study with Ed, I thought you might have studied with Henry.
That's right. Yeah, I did.
Nice man and a good player.
I know it. He was. Is
he still with us?
I believe he's still around, but he's not at Perkins anymore, though.
No.
And that's Phyllis Paulson you mentioned. I don't remember her either.
Yeah, she...
Either she was there after me or before me.
Maybe she never existed, George. Maybe she's a kind of a fantasy woman of your life who never really existed in reality. I like to make stories like that. It makes life more interesting. Hey, Pete, thanks a lot for calling. Good to hear from you. It's kind of interesting. We were kidding about the accordion. Actually, I can think of two or three... really good jazz accordion players.
Well, Art Van Darn, isn't it?
Art Van Darn, right, who did Orange Colored Sky and all that, was on the Jerry Lester late night show.
And then you remember a guy named Leon Sash out of
Chicago. Yes, I do. And he recorded a fine album, which I may still have at home someplace.
Yeah.
There was also another couple of guys who played...
Tommy Gamina.
Yeah. And there was another
Joe Mooney.
Did he play? I don't remember him. He had a group. I know he played accordion too.
Sure.
Yeah, but because when you think of accordion, very often you think of guys like Dick Contino who played Lady of Spain really fast on a white accordion, and that'll turn you against accordion players faster than anything I know.
Our Lady of Spain.
That's right. Our Lady of Spain. Are there? I mean, this sounds really, it sounds like a stupid question, but you'll give me a very bright answer and get me off the hook, because I really care to know about people that you listen to that you enjoy today. Do you get a chance to listen to very much music?
There's a man in New York who I believe taught up here in Boston. His name is Fred Hersch, H-E-R-S-C-H.
You know, he's a pianist?
Yeah, wonderful pianist and a wonderful writer. Yes, in New York City. And Ellie, my wife Ellie, is a classical singer.
Really?
So we had Fred come up and we pulled out some German Lieder. And you thought those guys had been together all their lives doing it. It was wonderful. And Ellie said it was a pleasure to sing with him because he was a very sensitive accompanist. Then he'll turn around and play jazz.
Would it be okay? I don't know. I'm getting your permission. That's ridiculous. This is a day of women's lib and all. I wanted to talk with Ellie just for a little bit.
I wish you would. I've been hinting at it all night.
Oh, okay, Ellie, I'm awfully glad. I didn't realize you were a classical singer also.
Oh, yes.
How did you and George meet?
Well, I was somebody else's date at a Christmas party at his house.
Really?
Yes. I studied at the American Conservatory in Chicago. One of my colleagues was also 8 years old. We go back that far. And he was teaching in Southern California, and I was doing session work. I was doing movie soundtracks. And anyway, we always kept in touch. He was kind of like my big brother, and he called up one time, and he said, would you like to have Christmas dinner at George Shearing's house? Well, who wouldn't?
That's
and
right.
And so we went, and George was expecting, you know, bless him, he's gay, and George just thought he'd have his friend with him, and I was his friend. And we were sitting at dinner, and George was sitting at the end of the table, and I was to his right, and to my right was Leonard Feather of the LA Times.
Yeah.
And my date, Russell, was across from me, and his mother, who kept she was always with us, was next to him.
I detect hostility there.
No, of course not.
Hey, listen, I hate to do this. Just at the break for news again. I'm sorry, it's the network, and they won't hold up. Just hang around just a little bit longer, because I want to talk to you just a little bit more. Would that be okay with you?
Sure.
Yeah.
You know something, you guys are okay. You're my kind of people. George and Ellie Shearing, and we'll be back right after the news.
Smart move, New England. You've made the right choice. WBZ, New England's best for over 72 years.
Here's WBZ's Jack Hart.
Well, thank you, Darryl. We are still dealing with some very wet roadways. We understand it is raining like the dickens out there, so do drive with extreme care. Visibility will be poor, and we've heard some minor slipping and sliding situations occurring and thankfully clearing up quickly. Do watch out for them with that decreased visibility that's going to make it extra tough. If you're traveling in the downtown area, lower deck of Route 93, Tobin Bridge heading into the city, expressway northbound and southbound, all doing well. Before long, the taverns and establishments in the Boston area will close their door and let loose their patrons on the roadway. So do be extremely careful then. I'm Jack Hart, WBZ, 24-hour traffic network.
Piano player with a British accent who claims she's from the Cockney part of England. Anyway, George Shearing.
From the Cockney part of England.
I don't know. That's probably not even the right way to phrase it.
Believe me, I'm from the Cockney part of England.
You're adorable. You know that, George. I can see why Ellie. It must have been love the first time she looked at you. You were telling me about.
Listen, it wasn't love at first sight with me because it never been your first sight with me.
That was when I was going to say love at first sight. I said, God, don't say that because he's going to do a bad joke. I know he will do a bad joke on that. Anyway, you were telling me how you were at a friend's house and you were. And,
no, it was at George's house.
Oh, you were. This is. Oh my good. Oh, that's right too. That's right. That's right. How can you pass
she
up
was
an
at
invitation
my house
to
with
go
a
to
friend.
George's? Now, did George make a pass at you or anything?
Oh, we didn't see. No. He was very married. And I was going with somebody else, and I did not need a married man in my life. So we did not see each other for 2 years. We really, impressed each other.
Well, what happened after 2 years? Either one of you can pick up the story because you're both wonderful storytellers.
I'll pick up this one because we started dating. And we found ourselves at a Christmas party in Bob Hope's house. And by this time, Ellie and I had commenced our living together, which started in 1975. And we were at this party at Bob Hope's house, and Bob got to find out about it. I guess Ellie must have told him. And so he said to Ellie, "Ellie, do you mean to tell me that you're living in sin?" Ellie said, "No, of course not, in San Francisco. I mean, she's as fast as I am."
So her sense of humor, what you're suggesting, is similar to your own. You don't mind what you do to your wife, do you?
Well,
you don't mind what kind of an insult you throw that way.
We'll wait for the commercial on that one, Norm. Ellie, I want you to tell him the story about the lady in the elevator, because this is a real prize, Norm.
This is a
true story.
True story. Happened last week. Our building in New York always has a Christmas party. You know, people don't know each other in these high-rises in New York. I don't know who's living. I don't know the lady next door to us. So they have this little Christmas party, and people can go down in the lobby and have a drink and a cocktail, a little nibbly or whatever. And George always, the board asked George if he will play. So they bring in a Baldwin piano, and George plays for about a half an hour, and everybody shuts up and listens. And then they go on and they talk and they meet their neighbors and da-da-da-da. So December 16th, they've invited him again to do this. Last week, I got into an elevator. And this woman got on a lower floor. I had never seen her before. She walked in, she looked at me, and she said, "Are you Mrs. Shearing?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "Will your husband play promptly?" And I said, "I don't think he knows that tune."
Because you hum a few bars.
Exactly. I don't think he knows that tune. It went over her head.
Went right over her head. And she said, "Well, because I have three parties to go to." And I went back upstairs and I said, "George, I guess one knows who the hired help is."
I said, "I wish I'd have heard her say it." I said, "Why don't you lie down and let me wipe my feet on you for a
change?" Hey, tell me, Ellie, about... there's no rivalry between the two of you, is there, for careers and stuff?
No.
There's one star in the family, and she knows it.
I know, darling, but you'll get used to it.
Oh, you've done this act before. We're going to have to bill you and do Catch a Rising Star or something. Anyway, you were on the Frank Sinatra album,
right.
The trilogy.
Right.
As part of the chorus.
They hired 16, what they call backup singers. And I was one of them. And George and I are both Leos. But
now, when is that? What
August.
Month? That's August.
August.
Okay.
I'm the 13th, and she's the 22nd.
Right. And I just want to say, Norm, that I was the first one in the family to work with Frank Sinatra.
This guy's just left in the dust. He's only worked with Mel Torme. Is that a step?
No.
That's pretty much a lateral pass.
She came home from the session. She said, "Guess who it was with?"
Did you actually work with him, or did you just lay down the track and then he came and...
No.
Was he right there?
No, when I got the call from the contractor, she said, "Be down at Webster, Hall at such and such a time." And I said, "Fine. Who are we recording with?" She said, "I'm not going to tell you." So I had no idea. So off I went, and I got out of the cab, and I saw all these guys standing around. And I walked in, and I saw all these music stands, and I thought, wow, big orchestra. And as I was walking in, I saw on one of the stands, one of the lead sheets, and it said Sinatra. And I thought, "Be still, my heart." And sure enough, and he likes to work in with the orchestra. He doesn't want to be isolated. He doesn't want to be in a booth. And he was right there. Don Costa was conducting.
Mm.
And the orchestra, he was standing right in the center, right by Don Costa, with the microphone in his hand. And we were lined up just behind the orchestra in the same big, it was a big studio. And there we were. And I came home, and I could hardly wait to tell George, because I knew I had been the first one in the family.
Now, give me my day in the sun, baby. What happened 2 days later?
I forget.
All right, I'll tell it myself. You forget. The phone rang in my office. And I went out to the kitchen after I got off the phone. And I said, how long were you with Frank? Oh, she said, we did two sessions. I said, would you believe 2 weeks? She said, what? I said, yeah, we're playing in Carnegie Hall with Sinatra for 2 weeks. Well, this is why she didn't want to tell you.
Oh, so you actually did? Oh, so
yes,
you said you worked with him
the
first,
male
Ellie.
Leo but is, always has been, and always will be, slightly superior to the female Leo.
But otherwise, there's no rivalry, as I have asked you about. No, there's no rivalry between the two of you. You did. You worked with Sinatra for 2 weeks live then in performance.
He was live. I wasn't.
Now, did both of you get to know him well enough to form opinions, and are they the same?
We went to dinner with him.
Really?
With Barbara
at the Copley Plaza.
And you're mentioning Bob Hope, all these. Their name's almost as big as George and Ellie Sheeran.
Listen, can I tell you a quick story?
Oh, sure. Slow story, too, if you'd like. Do it promptly, though, and I'll hum a few. I'm sorry. The proximity of George is making me do bad jokes. I'm sorry.
But the Sinatra we know, after we had both worked with him, now segue maybe 6 months, and it was my birthday time. And when we came home from a tour, in our foyer was a bag, a Saks Fifth Avenue bag. And I thought, maybe I had ordered something before we went off on tour and it had arrived. So I looked in it and there were two boxes. And I unwrapped one, and in it was a large, I mean large, bottle of a cologne that Barbara Sinatra had introduced me to.
It's called Fracas.
Fracas. And I thought, oops, I didn't order this. I mean, I couldn't afford it. And so I thought, maybe George had gotten it for me for my birthday. So I said, George, did you send me something from Saks Fifth Avenue for my birthday? And he said, no. And I thought, so I opened up the other box, and there was a huge bottle of the perfume. Then I knew.
One cologne and one perfume.
Yeah. Then I knew I hadn't ordered it. And he said, well, is there a card? And I said, yes. And so I opened the card, and it said, Ellie, dear, we're very sorry we can't make it to your birthday, but have a wonderful day. Love, Barbara and Blue Eyes. And I looked at him and I said, I don't understand this. And he said, well, read it again. And I did, and I got down to Barbara and Blue Eyes.
Wow.
And I said, oh, this is a gag. Somebody's playing a gag on me. And he said, no, I don't think so. And so I looked on, there was a card from Saks Fifth Avenue, the sales lady. Well, it was a Saturday, and I had to wait till Monday to call, and I did, and I got her on the phone, and I said, this is Mrs. George Shearing. I said, I received some perfume from, and she said, yes, from Frank Sinatra. She said, I took the order. He did send it to you. So that's the Frank that we know.
The same Frank that took care of Sylvia Sims' very, very complex operation when she had it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I am tired of the media denigrating Frank Sinatra, because that's not the Frank Sinatra I know.
No, but even in the media, though, you hear a lot of stories about the kinds of things that you guys are talking about, that he is a very considerate, very special
They're underplayed by comparison with the other stuff.
I guess so. The other stuff is more flamboyant, I suppose. And maybe it's a reflection on all of us that we like to hear nasty things. That's much more fun to hear than good things. But I do hear that, and I never met Sinatra, but I do hear the fact that he's very considerate and very kind and does the kind of. But that's really nice to be the recipient of that kind of kindness.
Yes.
Is something very, very special.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are okay.
Well,
do you know how attractive Ellie is, by the way, George? Can you tell us?
Yes. Somebody told me once. Yeah.
And I wrote this
some guy in Harvey, Illinois, probably. Yeah, you know
Her brother. He wanted me in the family.
What movies have you done, Ellie?
My first soundtrack was Finian's Rainbow with Petula Clark and Fred Astaire. And this, oh, I don't mean to talk so much, but I've got a great story. When I was a little kid, I mean really little, like 3, 4, and 5 years old, I was absolutely in love with John Wayne. I mean, he was the greatest thing since Dick Candy for me. And my very closest girlfriend also was in love with him. But so when we would go to school in the morning, whoever said first when we met to walk to school, "I love John Wayne," got to love him that day. And then the other one had to take Richard Green.
Well, I remember Richard Green was a really good-looking guy.
Oh,
wasn't he with the big dimples? He played Robin Hood, didn't
That's
he?
That's right.
And all
That's
that
right.
stuff, yeah.
Oh, he was wonderful. But anyway, now I'm going to do, I get on the lot, Warner Brothers lot. This is my first movie. And I walk over to the soundstage, and we do the first set. And now we break for lunch. And I'm standing outside the soundstage, and we're about to go to the commissary, and who's coming down the walk but John Wayne? And my knees started to buckle. I thought, oh my gosh, here he is. And then I saw him, and he had a bit of a paunch.
I'm sorry.
And it was all over. It was all over. I called my dearest girlfriend. I mean, this must be 20 years later, right? I called her that night, and I said, when she said hello, I said, "You can love John Wayne."
You think Richard Green did not have a paunch?
I don't know. I don't want to find out. But
it'd be like me finding Sophia Loren, who I've been desperately in love with for years, had bad breath or something. But even a little paunch, I mean, you must not have really loved the guy. It must have been infatuation.
Let's see. I also did Hello, Dolly.
Yeah, with Carol Channing?
No, with Barbara Streisand.
Oh, Barbara Streisand. I'm thinking of the play.
Yeah.
And Star, you did, didn't you?
Yes, Star, with Julie Andrews, I think.
Yes, yes.
And On a Clear Day with Streisand.
Yeah.
And
did you get to see all these people that you're talking about?
Oh, sure.
Because I didn't know whether in the course you just, again, you did the
sometimes
recorded it without ever getting to meet the stars of the show.
Yeah,
you
right.
did, though.
Oh, sure. And I remember seeing Fred Astaire when we walked in that soundstage. And he was over in the corner practicing. He had his hands in his pocket, and he had one of those neckties tied around his waist. And he was just kind of going over some dance steps, and every eye was on him, because he there was something about him, the way he
Congress, I always felt that there are certain people in the world, Congress should pass some kind of legislation making them into national historical shrines so they never die.
That's right.
And certainly you'd put Fred Astaire right at the top of the list, and he never even had a paunch.
No.
he had hardly any skin at all, is what I think. I was so thin. But it's kind of interesting. I was thinking the superstars always surprise you in the sense that they rehearse a lot, and they're never quite, never quite done rehearsing. Is that true of you, George? Do you play so much publicly? Do you practice also on the side at all?
No.
there goes my whole theory right down the toilet.
Well, when I did the Claude Bowling album, which I spoke to you about earlier on, I had to, because I had a lot of memorizing to do and a lot of fingering to prepare and all that stuff. So I did. But what am I going to do, sit down and practice jazz? Maybe I should, I don't know. But the thing is, jazz is the result of, spontaneity, and you don't want to practice and get certain phrases into your head, because that's what you'll use, and it's okay, but it doesn't sound the same as pulling them out of the back of your brain.
No, that's true, but I thought maybe just limbering up your fingers or something. Can you sit at the piano cold without having been at the piano, say, like the early performance where you haven't played since the night before?
I'll ask Ellie,
I direct a question at you. Thank you.
Sir.
Yes, ma'am.
He can fall out of bed and go right on stage and play.
Yeah.
There was almost a divorce.
How's that?
Because before we left San Francisco, we were going to do a benefit for our church. And this guy who with whom I showed up at his Christmas party, he was my West Coast accompanist. So the program ran, I was going to do some leader, and then Russell was going to do some classical stuff, then intermission, and then George Shearing. And we had been on a cruise before then, and I've been rehearsing. I mean, we classical singers have to rehearse, and we have to memorize. I mean, we just don't fall out of the bed like, you know, some of these jazzers do. And
so there's a question right there of you know, superiority of talent or something. Carry on, my dear. Yeah, I don't mean
to. Anyway, we were going to do this benefit, and I was working on it for weeks. And then when we got home, I rehearsed with my accompanist, and I said to George, now this is about 4 days before the concert, I said, what are you going to play? And he said, well, I don't know yet. So now it's 2 days before the concert, and I have another final rehearsal with my accompanist, and I said, okay, what are you going to wear? I haven't really quite decided yet. We go to the church on the day of the concert, and we're doing a sound check. And on the way to the church, I said, George, what are you going to play? He said, well, I've kind of got it together, but not quite. Now, Norm, it's the day of the concert. And we are driving through the church, and I said, okay, George, what are you going to play? He said, George. So it was a very informal concert. See, he was sitting in the front pew listening to me and to Russell, and now we changed places. And we're back in the office and during intermission, and the people are filing back into the church. And it's George, you know, I said, George, it's your turn next. What are you going to play? Well, I've just about... So he went on, and I had done some things, the Rachmaninoff vocalese. And all of a sudden, I hear from George.
The vocalese Rachmaninoff is da da dee da 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 dee da da da, and so I turned it into da da dee da da dee da da dee da da.
Love is a splendid, money's splendid.
Oh yes.
And all of a sudden, the nickel dropped, and I knew why he couldn't tell me what he was going to play, because Russell and I had planned his program. He took everything that we did and did a takeoff on it and brought down the house.
Oh,
I could have killed him.
Were you really angry? Could you admire his showmanship? It sounds like a fantastic thing, which probably hardly anybody could do.
No.
Except this guy. Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
He sat there and listened to what our program was and then just took over the thing.
You're going to kill me with frustration.
Oh, what a boy. I wish I were there. Boy, that must have been so thrilling.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys.
Yeah.
To have you on the program.
We're going to do it. We're
going to
go to bed.
Yeah, well, then you won't even be able to stop to get something to eat. Normally you do that after a performance, do you not?
No, oh, maybe. We don't eat after the performance.
Well, singers do.
Yeah. Honestly.
Is there much conflict between a singer and a pianist?
I don't, since I've been a singer. That's true.
That's right. We have a singer right here,
right.
Too.
Yes.
That's true.
And he sings very well.
Yes, he does. He sings. I have to ask you this, again, as a fledgling pianist myself. Imagine a fledgling pianist at my age. But I was thinking, as you were singing and you accompany yourself, That seems to me to be totally impossible, especially you're doing runs and all kinds of nice fill-in things as you're singing. I would think you'd have to concentrate on that or concentrate on your singing.
Do you know what goes through my mind?
Yeah.
I live momentarily in the fantasy world of imagining myself being able to magically produce an orchestra with strings and woodwinds and all that stuff. And I'm totally unconscious of the fact that I am actually playing, but that I am somehow willing this accompaniment that's going through my head, which is why I can get all these changes and these tone colors and everything and sing at the same time.
Oh, I think that's...
It does take some coordination.
Oh, it takes tremendous...
as my own piano teacher says, it's playing the piano, you're playing like two languages at once because you got both hands going, and then you're singing on top of that, so that's three. It's like juggling. Hey, I want to, anyway, it's been a great pleasure. George, I appreciate you introducing me to your wife. She and I plan to run away first thing in the morning.
Yes, I do understand.
Steal
the blind man's girl, would you? All right.
Okay. Oh, don't hit me with that. Don't do that. Don't do that to me. Anyway, Ellie and George, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this.
Well, and you've just given me an opportunity to say hello to all my friends in Harvey, Illinois. Thank you, Norm.
And Scullers Guest Quarter Suite Hotel, Sturrow Drive, actually on Soldiers Field Road end of it.
Sturrow, is that close to Mono Drive?
I'm not going to even respond to that. And just behave yourself or I'll slap you right in the face. 8:30 and 10:30 Saturday night, the last two chances to get George.
Does your baby suffer from red, irritated diaper rash?
It was more like a gauded type diaper rash. Makes you feel awful. You know, want to do something to help him, make him more comfortable.
Skip it right now. But we'll go to Bob, my friend Bob Coffey, who's up in New Hampshire and who does a jazz show. I guess you still are doing the jazz show, are you, Bob?
Yes, Norman. How are you?
Good, thank you. You probably wanted to talk to George, and I never got to you.
Norm, I could go out and eat worms right now.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what that means, but it sounds awful.
Well, I don't know. I called about, I don't know, I guess it was about 7 minutes or two, and I knew I was very close. I did. I just got home from doing a fill-in gig at WEVO. They have jazz on Friday nights, and I was...
WEVO, you know, where in New Hampshire is
that's
that?
That's the New Hampshire Public Radio.
Public Radio, and what is the frequency?
They got all kinds. 90.3 in one town, 105.2 in another. I mean, they're all over the state. I forget them. The 90.3, I know. Oh, yeah, 89.1.
So the gig that you did then was over a number of radio stations.
Oh, well, they're transmitters throughout the state of New Hampshire.
I get you.
Yeah, what's his name? I can't think of his name. Della Chiesa.
Oh, Della Chiesa, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
You have trouble with the first name too, huh? That was the kind of thing, and like I say, I was picking up the show as I'm coming home from there. It's in Concord, and I live about 35 miles away. Let me bend your ear for whatever it's worth, and first of all, how you doing?
You managed to sneak that in, eh? I'm not doing just fine, thank you.
All right, always a pleasure. In fact, I said if I don't do anything, I have to stay on here to speak to the man that's been so nice to me so many times over the years, and also has soothed my soul with his music for so many years.
I know, it's kind of nice. I was kidding about one thing, but really not kidding, because I'm quite serious about that. In an ever-changing world, it's nice to know that George Shearing is still around making pretty sounds.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I don't know if I ever pointed out to you, but I have been off and on a dues-paying musician, member of ASCAP and stuff like that.
No, I didn't know that. I know that you're on radio and all that.
Oh, God, I did about 14 jingles for Jordan Marsh at one time.
No, but, hey, you're okay. What do you play?
I play, as they say, keys.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. And,
not even keyboard anymore. Now it's down to keys.
Well, anything that's like a keyboard. I mean, you lay your hands on it, you play keys. That kind of fact. The fact you were talking about singing and playing the piano and so forth. Well, I'll go you one better. I play left-handed bass plus play the piano on the right hand and sing at the same time. And then if somebody has the nerve to come up and say, "What's the next song you're going to play?" and then you try to talk in rhythm to them or something like that. Anyway,
yeah, I know that's it. You mean they come up to you while you're performing?
Yeah. Anyway, what I wanted to point out was that, and why I wanted to speak with George so urgently. Naturally, I come across an awful lot of his music in doing the jazz thing. And I've been following him. In fact, he's an influence on the way I play the piano, for whatever it's worth. But he was the guy that really incorporated so-called block chords. You play two-handed and you play melody with your little finger way up top, and you double the melody with the thumb of your left hand, and it turns out to be a block chord and so forth. But this is what he specialized in at one phase of his playing, particularly in the late 40s and then 50s when he could go on with the quintet. I wrote a song for him, and I don't know if you ever noticed, but Lullaby Birdland goes from minor to major, okay?
It was the first part. La da do dee do do be do do dee do do dee do. Then it goes into major. La da 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 dee do do. And that's the way the thing goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I did a tune for him in which I went from minor to major as well, and be just out of tribute to him, so to speak. And I called the thing, "Let's Hear It for George." And I wanted to hum it for him in the worst way.
I
still may get a chance because he is that nice a guy. There was one year in which he had, I guess, two or three releases out at the same time, and he became aware of the fact that I was probably one of a number of stations playing his stuff. And he sent me a personalized postcard, Christmas card. I was just, dissolved by the fact that he would take the time and trouble to do that. So
he's a very nice man. He's changed not at all since I used to talk to him way back in the 50s. Mm. I keep reminding myself how long ago that was.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he's still talking to him today. It's like talking to him back then. He has not changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very decent man. And his wife, by the way, Ellie, is a, what a nice lady she
is. Yeah. More than decent.
Wasn't that just so darn entertaining? And George adding the slap and reaction just before the mic shut off. Laugh out loud funny. What a treat that they were willing to stay and take calls. You can hear that Norm, George, and Ellie clearly enjoyed each other's company. I hope you think about becoming a patron to support the show. The link to Patreon is below. Whatever you want to give is appreciated. It is charged monthly, so as little as $1 a month. If you want to give more, you can always adjust the amount. And I will donate a percentage to the Norm Nathan Scholarship Fund at the Berklee College of Music here in Boston. Until the next broadcast treasure is discovered. Closing the vault and leaving this world a little sillier than we found it. 4. Parker Brothers, Carol Stein Krause, Trivial Pursuit, Monopoly, Snardvark, Ernie Kovacs, The Guest Quarters Suite Hotel, Scullers, Sue Auclair, The Blue Note New York, Neil Swanson, WOMR and their Tunes from the Dunes, especially The Lush Life Jazz Show, The Blue Stars of France, Norm's Piano Teacher, Les, Phyllis Paulson, Accents, George and Ellie Shearing, Silly Jokes, Fred Hirsch, Christmas Parties at Bob Hope's House, The Lady in the Elevator, Bob Coffey in WEVO in New Hampshire, Battling Ruby Brath and Lean George Ween, Frank and Barbara Sinatra, Daryl Gould, Jack Hart, and the jazz-tastic Norm Nathan, I'm Tony Nesbitt.